Intellectual competencies, data deduction skills, scanning, synthesizing, drawing conclusions from data, interpreting. Okay. Information search skill, gathering information from printed and other records. I have to go to different sources, read books in the library. I sit in the library of the college, I read books. I order for books. I'm a part of three groups, book groups. I buy groups, I read them. I also go to Google if it's necessary. Although I find Google is not the authentic source for everything, with due respect to Google. When it comes to knowing something for which I want, I find that the printed matter is much, much reliable for my purpose. Visioning skill. Projecting trends and visualizing possible and probable futures and their implications. Things are going on in a certain way. Do I have the vision to see what will happen 5 years from now? How will the training world be 2 years from now? We are in 2020, 2022, what will happen? 2025, what will happen? Do I have the visioning skill? Businesses will change. Technology will go to a different, higher leap. So will we have the same type of training methodology? That visioning skill one needs to have. Steps involved in hiring and training trainers. The steps involved in hiring and training trainers are as under. One is vacancy identification. How many trainers? How long? You want full-time or part-time, in-house or outsiders? Simple. Job analysis and competency mapping. Duties and responsibilities of the trainer, qualifications, experience, personality types, deliverables. What sort of qualities he has? Second one. Third is estimate the cost and obtain sanction. Cost of training, trainer's fees and other miscellaneous expenses. Take a sanction from your management, your company. Point number four, recruitment and selection of trainers, hiring the right trainers, full-time, part-time, behavioral competencies is a very tricky thing. Hire a trainer not because you like him. Hire a trainer not because he talks sweetly to you. Hire a trainer not because, you know, he is somebody. Hire a trainer because you are convinced as a training manager that he will deliver what the company wants to deliver. You and the trainer may have some behavioral issues, but you have to hire him or her because he or she will do good to the company. So don't get personal. Be objective in your job when you're recruiting and selecting a trainer. Last one, training the trainers. Domain expertise and training delivery skills, understanding business side of the organization. Brief him. Like we said earlier, if the trainer is coming as a seasoned trainer, then you may have to just give a basic briefing. He absorbs it. But if the person is a bit inexperienced, then you need to actually put that person in an orientation, like a classroom, and you know, make the person understand these are what we are expecting from you. Training the trainers. Factors that enhance the credibility of a trainer. The credibility, the brand value, the value of the person, of the trainer, increases. Trainers are professionals and need to conduct themselves with a certain credibility. There should be a certain type of an image. Not a projected image, but a real image. What is inside me, what is outside me should be congruent. Not for the sake of brand building artificially, no. Because this is one area you should not do it. It's a sin to do that. You are something inside and you are outside something. That shows after some time. There is no congruence. There is no credibility. There is no, you're not projecting your natural thing. Okay? Your integrity is also not there. Role models, command attention and natural respect, and be reliable, honest and straightforward. Okay? Four factors usually determine credibility of trainers. Personal conduct, appearance, the way you come. You don't have to go to parlor or something, but come properly dressed for the occasion. If it's an outbound training, I'm taking people to the hills or to the resort, and we're going to have a residential outbound training for 3 or 4 days. I don't need to wear this which I'm wearing right now. There I need to have an appearance which is merging with the background, which is accepted by the people. A grooming, the postures, the movements, the voice, the dress sense and other personality characteristics, which should be appealing to the people. Subject expertise, obviously. Thorough knowledge of one's domain area, mastery over constant practice. Through constant practice, intensive experience counts. Third point is delivery facilitation skills. Enabling and empowering others to help themselves. Watch this. although we are calling people as trainers, they are not trainers, they are facilitators. I am enabling you and empowering you to help yourself. I am not telling you that you must do it my way. Please get this very clear. And this requires empathy. This requires expansive thinking. Your individuality will come in the way of saying, hey, I am telling you something so good, why can't you understand me? That's getting personal. So enabling and empowering others to help themselves, capability to understand needs of the trainers, use different learning approaches, handling Q&A sessions effectively. Okay? Questions fall under the following categories. Open-ended questions. Answers expected are descriptive, not yes and no. So you ask questions. What do you think about this this movie I've shown you now? So they'll give answers. It's more descriptive. If you say, is this movie good or bad? Then the second one comes. Close-ended questions. Bipolar. Yes or no. There is only one answer. Yes or no. There's no maybe. So the person cannot speak out his mind. You're already restricting his answers. I would always discourage the second one as a trainer. Always have an open-ended question being asked. Even when you're giving questionnaires, when you're giving feedback sheets, make it open-ended. Let people speak out their minds and improve you and what you're doing. What's wrong? Overhead questions addressed to the whole group. So some question I throw open. Okay, guys, what do you think about this clipping I showed you now? Overhead questions. Okay? Direct questions addressed to the participant. Hey Vijay, what do you think about this thing I'm doing? Directly I'm addressing to Vijay. Reverse questions. Questions that paraphrase the question by the participants. So Vijay is asking me, how will I use this skill for my development? Okay Vijay, you are asking, how will I use this skill for your development? I'm rephrasing, I'm putting the same question back to him. Why do you do this and when do you do this? Am I mocking him? No. I am making him understand, oh, is this so? He's reminding himself. Sometimes people ask questions for which they have the answers. So when you do a reverse questioning, you're provoking the person to think a little more expansive. Then you give the answer, of course. A redirected question, seeking participation and answers from the audience. Vijay is asking a question, hey, what do you think about this answer? I asked somebody else, Shilpa, somebody sitting there. I said, Shilpa, what do you think about this? She may give some answer. What about Santosh? What do you think about this? Mr. Andrew, what do you think about this? I can ask this. Seeking participation and answers from the audience. I normally do this when somebody asks a question. I said, could anybody answer this question asked by Vijay? Then somebody say, I think it is low. I said, then I'll give the answer. So we have a more variety of answers from people. Answering questions is very important. Don't keep a question unanswered. Don't keep a question unanswered. There are questions, my dear friends. No human being is completely knowledgeable about everything that he does. Not even a trainer with so many years of experience like me. There have been instances when somebody has asked me a question, and guess what? I didn't have the answer at that point of time. I told them, take the question, I will give you the answer. So I go back, I reflect, maybe I refer to something, then I give the answer to the person. And I make it a point to tell everybody present there that this is the answer. It is not to impress anybody. It is to respect the fact that there was a question asked. Every question has to be respected with an answer. Like every communication has to be replied with a communication. This is a part of an individual respect for the person. And this speaks very highly about a trainer when he does this. Some people just shunt away questions. I'll talk to you later. This is not relevant. Every question which is asked in the training room is relevant. You may think it is not relevant. You may think it is trivial. You may think it is stupid, but it is not. The moment you answer a question, there's a certain energy that you create in the training room. The trainer needs to identify the learning patterns of the participants and answer these questions accordingly. Different strokes for different folks. Everybody's got different learning patterns. Some people are fast learners. Some people, you give them a story, they understand the reason why you're giving the story, they got the answer. Some people need you to explain it. So please explain. Don't be in a hurry. Don't be impatient. You may say, everybody has understood. How come you're not understood? You're getting personal. Don't do that mistake. It's like having a child who's asking too many questions. A good parent will understand in child psychology that you must answer all the questions. It's a challenge for adults like us. To be a trainer, try to be in touch with a small 3 or 4 year old kid, you know, and that kid, try to spend some time, about an hour or two. I recommend this to everybody who wants to be a trainer. And if you are in a position to communicate with a 3 or 4 year old who's asking a lot of questions, I think you're developing a skill to be patient, to answer all questions, however silly they may appear to be to you. Understanding the questions rightly is a skill. Sometimes you just shoot off. A question is asked, even before the question is complete, you give an answer. Understand the question rightly. The trainer should adopt the practice of clarifying the question before answering. Somebody is asking questions, so ask him, okay, you are asking this question, you want to know this, is right or wrong? Clarify, because behind every question there is a motive. Somebody has got some doubt of a gap, a problem which he or she needs to solve, so they are asking a question. So you have to be clear that their question is clearly understood by you. You are not a know-all. Every question is unique. So ask, is this what you meant by this question? Then that person will say yes or no. Then you ask, what exactly do you want to know? And then the person will come out, this is exactly my issue. I said, okay, fine. Then you answer. Don't jump into it. Feedback skills, giving and seeking feedback, objective, not personal. It's about the issue, about the behavior, not the person. Free-flowing, unthreatened, authentic feedback. Don't try to please people. Just because a senior most person in the company is sitting there, don't try to do that thing. Be very clear before the training starts that you are the trainees, I am the trainer. We have to play our roles very well. So whether it's a MD or the CEO sitting there, or whether it is a junior most guy sitting there, you don't have to please people. If you please people, your training goes for a toss. The purpose for which you have been hired, serve the purpose by being authentic. Personal attributes connected with learnings. Certain attributes, you know, you learn something, you put it across properly. There are certain things each of us has this. Motivation for improvement. Things can be done better. Feedback is an essential part of calibrating the training effectiveness. Okay? Social practices. What are social practices? When you're dealing with people, there are certain social practices, behaviors which we need to display. That will increase our credibility as trainers. Social practices are essentially the behavior and the beliefs in dealing with others. Trainers should believe in the capacity of individuals for learning. You must strongly believe that every person is willing to learn. Not give up on people. I've had people in my training programs, in my NLP workshop, which runs for 6 days. Up to the fourth day or the fifth day, that particular person is like a dead rock. Just not absorbing anything and saying, I don't understand, I don't understand, I don't understand, I don't understand. Can I give up? No. In fact, I took it as a learning for me. And everybody around is telling that person during break time, Mary, this is so simple. How come you're not understood? No, I'm not understood. Accomplished person, a person who's accomplished from industry, holding a HOD position. So then I had a one-to-one. I keep doing. You see, it's a question of the process should keep on without giving up on the behavior of the person. Something is blocking the person. And then suddenly there's a flourish. On the day 5 afternoon session, tack, the whole thing happens. Like the Eureka experience of Archimedes. Eureka. I said, yeah, now I've understood. I said, now sit down and try to see what are the things that you have understood in the last 4 days. Then everything connects, everything connects, everything connects, because there was a block. And the block was unblocked. I did not do this. I only created conditions and I stretched myself to empower that person. That person got empowered and came out of the block. Okay? So that's where the belief in the capacity of the individuals for learning is important. Trainers should uphold the dignity of the trainees as individuals and not treat them as members belonging to any group. Don't make this mistake. Don't get personal. I like people from one community, so I start being friendly with them. I don't like people from some community, so I start being hostile with them or I being sarcastic with them. This is nonsense. every human being is sitting there, as far as possible, you are an HR person, first and foremost. You are dealing with behavior. Your role is to empower people. So if you get personal, then you are not an HR person, according to me. You may have difference of opinion between A and B, but in that particular space of training space, your role is to maintain the dignity of every person there, including yours. Nothing should become a slanging match, or wherein people start aligning themselves for and against each other. That's a very incorrect thing, and that's one thing one should skillfully handle. By having an acceptable social conduct, trainers need to create an environment of mutual trust and respect. Just connect to people, create a mutual trust, and they may have the misgivings. They may not like the community to which you belong. But then your role is to understand that they are not here for that purpose. They are here to learn. Set the tone and reinforce the tone throughout the training program. It's important. A trainer should be polite while dealing with trainees. Yes, obviously. Firm and polite, I would say. Be empathetic to the problems of the trainees. Learn to disagree without hurting the sentiments of others. Pay equal attention to all the trainees. Treat all participants objectively. Objectively means address the behavior, not the person. Now, my perspective finally, as I do it for every chapter, in most cases, in today's training scenario, organizations are managing through in-house trainers by training domain experts into additional soft skills and facilitation skills. It's cost-cutting, or they're in a speed to do changes, they would rather go for an in-house trainer. This reduces the cost of the training and is expected to produce results faster. In spite of that, this is a feedback I've got from many companies. It is being noticed that in-house trainers struggle a lot to produce results. Why is it so? The employees of the company who are being trained by an in-house trainer, in-house means somebody is already working there as another employee, they take him for granted. There's already that deja vu, I already know you. And they have opinions about that person even before the training starts. Oh, he's going to train, yeah. And they already put a sort of a barrier between, a mental barrier. So they may not absorb training in-house. It's more or less like, you know, okay, you're there, we'll get trained. Some of them get trained, some of them are open, but not all. So it may not produce that type of results. On the other hand, hiring trainers from outside, either situationally, as and when it warrants, or as a retainer has proved to be expensive. It is expensive for the company in terms of time, money, etc. Unless the results are produced. If you take a trainer from outside, you pay a lot of money, you have a beautiful setting for the training, and if nothing happens, even after evaluation, after months, then that's very sad. All in all, if training has to be effective, one must choose a combination of in-house and external training on certain proportion. Like I told you earlier, for certain aspects of the training which requires in-house skills, take only that. Don't call a trainer from outside unnecessarily. But for certain things, any behavioral change you want, call an outsider, because outsiders can address behavioral changes much better. Anything to do with technology, anything to do with upgradation of domain skills, in-house is the best, not an outsider. Because they know exactly what they want, right? So my dear friends, with this, I conclude this session. Thank you for listening. Good luck.